This is The Wheelhouse. I'm John Dankosky. You can join our conversation on our website, wnpr.org/The Wheelhouse. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at WNPR Wheelhouse. You can always give us a call if you want, 860-275-7266. If you want to join our conversation about the week's news, boy, there's a lot of news this week. So let's start things off with Colin McEnroe. He's the host of The Colin McEnroe Show on Connecticut Public Radio. Hello there, Colin.
Good morning, Mr. Dankosky.
Also with us is Dan Haar. He's editor and columnist at Hearst Connecticut Media. Hello there, Danny.
Good morning.
And Susan Bigelow is a contributor to ctnewsjunkie.com. Hello, Susan.
Good morning.
The cameras of CTN, the Connecticut Network, are here with us today. We spent a whole bunch of time talking about what we were going to talk about today. And then we got the news that the Quinnipiac University poll came out. Yay. And it's really nice to have a little bit more information about this governor's race. So let's dig into it. It found the Democratic gubernatorial candidate, Ned Lamont, has an 8-point lead over Republican Bob Stefanowski. Oz Griebel, a petitioning candidate, is in third place, and he's picked up some support since the last time they polled, with 11%, Colin, of likely voters. And let's start there. That's the important thing here. These are likely voters. These aren't just people who are responding to a poll. These are people who probably will be voting in a month.
Right. So it's possible that he didn't really pick up any support that he didn't already have. One of the things we are talking apples versus oranges. I mean, this poll is, I think, pretty good for Ned Lamont. I would be more enthusiastic about this poll than a polls earlier that had him a little bit more ahead. It is likely voters. That's more important. It is October now, so people's positions are hardening off. You dig down into the crosstabs, and some of the other stuff that's a little bit interesting to me is he does well with women. I think we all believe women are going to show up in even greater numbers than they usually do this time. They feel pretty motivated about the political situation, and that's a strong part of his base. When people are asked what they think is the most important quality for a candidate, he tracks incredibly well with caring. I think he's at 71% for people who think that a caring governor would be the most important.
Did they ask about uncaring?
Uncaring was not what, it's not a valued quality.
It's not a valued quality.
So, and I think there's a lot to say about this, and I'll just yield to the other panelists. One thing that I'm intrigued by, okay, so the polled people were asked what was the most important issue for them, and their choices were essentially economy, taxes, state spending, and education. Education is kind of the one that doesn't fit in that constellation. Lamont got 80% of the people who said it was education, which makes me wonder, if I were Lamont, I would at least be looking at that and thinking, do I need to broaden this policy debate? You know, do I need to make sure, I mean, for example, environment, which we're going to be talking about in a few minutes, is not anywhere in that poll. Do I need to get more issues on the table? Because really, Stefanowski only runs strong among people who have identified taxes and state spending as important issues. Not even the people who think the overall economy is the most important issue. He doesn't have that group. That group actually belongs by, you know, a substantial margin to Lamont.
And as we've talked about, Danny, most of the debates so far, most of the television ads, most of the things you see from both candidates actually are about taxes and the economy. Ned Lamont just yesterday saying, you know, everything's about jobs, jobs, jobs. And so if it's the case that Bob Stefanowski is actually resonating with people who think about jobs and the economy, maybe that is something for Ned Lamont to worry about in this otherwise great poll for him.
Well, he's not going to pick up the people who are low information voters who think that because someone says I'm going to cut your taxes, that they're going to cut your taxes.
Hold, you're saying they're not going to cut taxes just because they say they are?
That would be correct, sir. Yes. So what I see in this is that when people say that they see the economy as the important thing, as you say, how can they favor? I guess it's within the margin. I believe I read it really quickly. It's within the margin on people who say that they want the economy is the most important issue. That's because the economy is way broader than taxes, and that's not something that Bob Stefanowski is articulating. It's only about taxes to him, and he's not all these things. And I wrote a column about that. All these things that are part of the economy. Casinos, tolls, you know, all this stuff. Well, tolls are taxes. No, he is talking about tolls. And all these things that are part of the economy, he's not talking about. And so what I see overall as I breeze through this, and Colin and I already disagree on one point, is that this is really about low information versus moderate to higher information voters. Stefanowski is running a campaign where he is going after low-information voters. He is hoping to pick off people who do not understand the issues and who say, okay, I like this guy. He's big. He's strong. I've heard people say after debates that he's the stronger, the quote, stronger candidate. Well, he's 6 foot four and he waves his arms around and he points his fingers and he blusters. Right? That's not going after high-information voters.
You just described me, by the way. I think I should run for governor. Okay, well, let me get some of Susan's take on this. What are some of the big takeaways from you out of this, Susan?
What I found was really interesting was that Lamont has actually successfully nationalized this race, at least I think for a certain segment of the population. They actually polled, the Quinnipiac people polled whether or not Donald Trump or Dan Malloy were more important to making a decision about who to vote for governor. And you would think, well, Dan Malloy would be more important because he's the governor of the actual state. But no, Donald Trump was actually significantly ahead there in people who were making a decision that factored in some of those guys. So that's really interesting. And that's something that Lamont has been hitting on. He's been hitting Stefanowski for his support of Trump. Trump polls very badly in Connecticut. Women obviously are supporting Lamont in big numbers. And that's Lamont's message to them is resonating as well. So that, I think, is very interesting.
Important to say, though, Trump polls badly in Connecticut, including in this poll. Actually doesn't poll as badly in terms of unfavorables as Dan Malloy. Dan Malloy is still more unpopular than Donald Trump in Connecticut.
Right. Dan Malloy is less popular than dirt at this point. But that doesn't seem to make a difference to people.
Well, the other thing about importance in the race is that Donald Trump is still the head of the news and Dan Malloy is on vacation on Long Island, and when he's not, he's talking about Flag Day. So he's
right.
Winding down here.
I think the other thing is that the economy seems like it's getting a little better finally. And the crisis, the permanent fiscal crisis, at least has taken a little break. So people aren't quite as focused on that as they were, I think.
We're adding to a rainy day fund. Things
right.
are in some ways starting to look up. Is that part of the issue, Colin? And Danny can talk more to this, too. He's written about this. But this idea that it's all about how terrible Connecticut's economy is, Connecticut economy. But I don't know. The numbers don't necessarily bear that out across the board.
Right. If Stefanowski, I mean, he's obviously run this one-note campaign. So people who don't think that one note, the notion of cutting taxes, is the most important thing or that he is the most likely person to deliver on that promise, he just can't get them. He doesn't have another issue. He doesn't have another message about this. So probably the more sunny things get on the economy front, the worse that he will do because he doesn't have another message besides that dark message. I just want to quickly point out one thing we haven't mentioned so far. First of all, one thing that we know is that Republicans cannot win a statewide race in Connecticut without substantial unaffiliated support. And this poll, which is likely voters as opposed to the last Q poll, which was just regular voters, Lamont has actually reversed his position. He was trailing Stefanowski among unaffiliated voters. He's now ahead of Stefanowski among unaffiliated voters. Every poll is just a snapshot of a moment. The election is not being held tomorrow, so this does not tell us what's going to happen on election day. But as a snapshot, that should worry Stefanowski. If he's not getting his message across to unaffiliated voters, he can't win. I mean, he ultimately has to reverse that number in that poll to be competitive.
Yeah, we always remind people, again, that is the largest pool of voters in the state by a pretty long shot. And so you need to do well amongst those unaffiliated. Danny, real quick on this economy piece, you know, should Connecticut residents be complaining as much about the state of the Connecticut economy as perhaps they are now as they either answer a Q poll or as they go to the polls?
If they're looking at the long numbers, then yes. We still have not had sustained performance in any category of the economy. If they're looking at the most recent numbers, for example, the last 2 to 3 quarters, growth has been on par with the U.S. Job creation has been pretty good for Connecticut year to date, not over the last couple of years. Income is holding up, not great, but holding up. We are about to see a spate of pretty good numbers between now and the end of the year. So the near term is yes, whether people feel that's a big debate.
Hey, Susan, can I ask you about Oz Griebel coming in at 11%? So he's sort of been an afterthought in some of these things, hasn't made all the debates. I will quickly say that the debate that I'm moderating next Thursday night, it is now official, given this poll, that Oz Griebel will be taking part in the CBA, Connecticut Broadcast Association debate, which is carried by all the television stations. And I'll be taking part with folks from the various TV stations next Thursday. We can give you more information about like watching that and listening to it. But Oz is now part of it, and Oz is at 11%. That's not nothing.
That is not nothing, and he was polling around 4% in the last polls, which, again, not likely voters, registered voters, but still, he was down there. Very, very, very few people had even heard of him. And still, people really haven't heard of him a lot. But I think that that says two things. First off, I think it's he's been able to make something of an impact by being in the debates, but I think more importantly, getting ads up on TV. I think that, that his little appeal to nonpartisanship, Connecticut voters do like that. I think that people who are looking for an alternative to Lamont and Stefanowski, because people aren't really thrilled about their about the choices that they have. Nobody really is like on fire excited about Lamont or Stefanowski. So seeing somebody as an alternative, that's good. So I also think that Greville's support, it can't really grow all that much more. Maybe people can get to know him a bit more, but I think that he's kind of, unless he finds another way to break through, I don't think he's going to get much more than 11%.
Well, Danny's shaking his head back and forth. Yes?
Oz has a way of breaking through because he's had such a low clear, especially downstate where I work, he's had a very low identification rate. So as he becomes, with, for example, next week's debate, a little bit more visible, he may pick up. I think the issue with Oz, I know Oz, I like Oz. Oz is a friend of mine. The issue with Oz is Oz.
And you, sir, are no Oz Greeble. Yeah. Sorry, I had to finish the sentence.
Well, that's right. So Oz, conditions have been in place. We all described conditions a year ago under which a third-party candidate could rise. Those conditions are in place. This poll bears that out. These are not two candidates in the two parties that are well-liked. The conditions are in place for Oz Greeble. He is underperforming what we might have thought he would do. And part of that is because of the system that's set up. It's rigged, as you say. I hate that word rigged, but it's rigged. And part of it is because he didn't quite raise enough money early to get his message out and to be able to be in position to connect with voters. And part of it is he just doesn't connect on a personal level. That's not what he's trying to do. He's a great speaker.
Yeah, I mean, money's an important thing probably for both Stefanowski and Oz, but Oz in particular. I mean, if you have to stop to refuel, stop in the middle of October while you should be campaigning to refuel, that's going to slow you down a lot. Now, last Saturday, we're now in the middle of, you know, shoe leather, apple parade, fritter eating campaign, retail campaigning. Oz did not have an event on his schedule last Saturday. That's really unusual in October of an election year if you're running for governor. And that should tell you something. You know, and there are a number of ways to interpret it. But if you have to stop and refuel, you have to stop and get some money because you can't go out and shake hands and stuff like that. I think that right away is going to be a little bit of a problem. The thing that Danny and I disagree about, just so it's clear, is that he thinks he notices that Oz's numbers, he's getting 5% among Republicans and 9% among Democrats. I don't think that's important, and I'll say why. Lamont has 87% of Democrats. Stefanowski has 90% of Republicans. 87% of Democrats is a way bigger number because there are a lot more Democrats. Meanwhile, Oz's biggest number, unsurprisingly, is 18%. Among independents. Once again, that should be scary for Stefanowski. He needs unaffiliated voters more than Lamont needs them. If Oz starts gobbling them up, it's really going to come out of that discretionary pool that he needs to get to.
Can I have 15 seconds to
rebut? Yes, you can. Yes.
The scenario is that if Oz picks up a significant percentage, which is a low likelihood but a possibility, that hurts Lamont more than it hurts Stefanowski.
A quick thought on Bob Stefanowski. I mean, Oz Greeble isn't the only one maybe not showing up to all these things. Stefanowski isn't showing up to an awful lot of these forums. There's certainly been a sense that he doesn't talk to the media in quite the way that one might need to do to get the earned media, as they say, that goes along with any television advertising you might do.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I feel like a lot of people still have no idea who Stefanowski really is, what he offers beyond the tax cut. You know, I talk to a lot of people, and people really don't know him, and they don't see him. And I think that this is part of it, where he just kind of stays out of things, and he only appears for a debate once in a while to say, I'm going to cut your taxes, and that's it.
I'll give you another minute, Danny, just quickly, because we don't have a ton of time, to talk about your colleague Ken Dixon's two-part article. If you read his two-part series on Bob Stefanowski's business background, and that was the first thing you read about Bob Stefanowski, it probably doesn't paint the most flattering picture.
Yeah, I mean, he claims that he has been able to be a rebuilder. His new ad is actually a little bit humorous about him being a rebuilder with tools running around the house. There's no evidence in his business background that he's ever been anything but a financial engineer, and that means obviously, when you do financial engineering, you get yourself in trouble. And that includes the problem in India with the people dying in drug trials and other issues.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff to read in those articles. Colin, a quick thought?
I think the other problem that emerges in those articles is the image of a sort of a capitalist drone pilot, that he's sitting in some office in London and, like, bad things are happening in other places, and he's not necessarily close to the explosions. So, and I think that's sort of a bad image, too. And I think it – I'm surprised it's not an even bigger problem for him in Connecticut. He really hasn't been in Connecticut very much. You know, he's been living in London for a really long time. So he's kind of a drone pilot that way, too. He hasn't really been on the ground here.
I think he voted in London. I'm not sure.
We're going to go to a break. Colin McEnroe is host of the Colin McEnroe Show. Danny Haar is editor and columnist at Hertz Connecticut Media. Susan Bigelow is a contributor to CTNewsJunkie.com. When we come back, we're going to talk briefly about one of the things that the candidates really aren't talking much about at all. We're not polling about. Yeah, it's the environment. Just had a big study this week. Says the Earth's probably going to end. No big deal. We'll talk about that when we come back on The Wheelhouse. This is The Wheelhouse. I'm John Dankosky. You can join our conversation at WNPR.org/The Wheelhouse. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at WNPR Wheelhouse. Joining us is Susan Bigelow, contributor to CTNewsJunkie.com, Dan Haar, editor and columnist at Hearst Connecticut Media, and Colin McEnroe, the host of The Colin McEnroe Show on WNPR. What's in your show today, Colin?
No, I have no idea right now.
Oh, good.
Not because we haven't planned the show, but I know that tomorrow we are re-airing a show that we did about how people choose theme music. I have no idea what show we're re-airing today right now. I should have studied. Somebody will send me a message about what today's show is.
If
I know I've cut a promo for it.
If you're in the listening audience and you've heard a promo and you know what Colin's doing this afternoon,
what is my show about?
Please tell me. Send us a tweet if you would. I will also let you know once again, I'm moderating a debate next week, next Thursday. It's being hosted by the Connecticut Broadcasters Association. It's on CPTV and WNPR. We're going to be broadcasting at 7 o'clock that night. More information forthcoming, but it should be a very interesting debate. Let's talk about something that I'm hoping to ask the candidates about, little teaser, Susan. You know, this big report come out from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It's based at the UN. They've been giving dire climate warnings for quite some time, but the warnings just got a little bit more dire. In a nutshell, for people who haven't heard it, you know, over the course of the next 12 years or so, the world, not just America, needs to pretty much change the way it does everything, organize society and do public transportation and power things, or else the climate is going to pass a tipping point and humans won't be able to live here and give it 30 or 40 years. Does that sound about right? And doesn't that sound like something we might want to be talking about everywhere?
It does seem like it's at least a small concern. That, yes, that the planet, at least large swaths of the planet, may really, and this is true, may become unlivable for humanity. And this, it sounds like climate alarmism, but it really isn't, because the study says that if we do nothing, this worst case scenario, if we do nothing, then yes, the temperature of the planet is going to rise 7 degrees by 2100. And 7 degrees doesn't sound like much, but what that means is it means polar ice melting, it means rising seas, and at least like maybe a couple feet. We're talking about Old Saybrook being underwater at that point. We're talking about more and frequent and more extreme weather. And just unpredictable effects all over, massive extinctions, just very, very difficult stuff for us to deal with. And what that's going to mean for humanity is that there will be massive refugee crises. There'll be resource shortages. It's going to be a very different world in about 80 years if we do nothing. And the other study that came out said that if we don't do anything by around 2030, 2040, that there really won't be any stopping it. So no, the candidates right now, at least for governor, are not talking about it very much. And Bob Stefanowski actually kind of dismissed this as saying, well, that's really more of a federal thing. You know, then let's just move on. I've got taxes to talk about. Ned Lamont's talked about it a little bit more, but really there's been a surprising amount of silence.
Well, I mean, Danny, what do you think about this? I mean, obviously, at the federal level, this is a very huge issue. It's sort of at the personal level, it's a huge issue. Should we be talking about this in the governor's race?
Not really, not too much. No, I don't think there's much that states can do. It's a sort of a boutique
retreat
issue for
from
state.
The shoreline.
Connecticut,
worry
Connecticut
about
can
renewable
shut,
power.
Yeah,
nothing. Right.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't do anything. I think this is an urgent, dire international issue. And the UN report, it should be noted, was commissioned by the Paris Climate Accord. I mean, the UN report was commissioned by the Paris Climate Accord. It was part of that agreement. And so this is really very much of an international issue. Connecticut could shut down. Connecticut could turn the lights out, which I know a lot of people think is happening. But it's, you know, the lights are coming a little bit back on. and it wouldn't have any effect, not little effect, no effect. And I'm also a little bit dire about people's ability to make things happen because, you know, you just go to Whole Foods and watch all the people who don't bring any bags and who get double bags and watch all the people idling in the car. These are people who are at home composting. And I'm guilty of that. I'm like, you know, saving lemon rinds so they don't go in the trash. And I live alone in a 2,200 square foot house. That's not good for the environment. We're doomed.
Part of the problem. So go ahead, Susan.
I actually disagree. I think that there's a lot that the governor can do about the environment. Not necessarily reversing climate change. Obviously, that takes coordination among the international community. But the governor can help keep the state within the Paris Climate Accords, not actually joining it. Of course, we can't do that. But, you know, keeping our state on par with those goals, trying to reduce emissions, that's a good thing. But the other thing that the state can do is prepare. And that's, I think, where we're going to have to be going. We're going to pass the point where we can prevent, and then we're going to have to start talking about preparation for storms, preparation for rising seas, preparation perhaps for an influx of people from south of here who are having trouble living where they used to live.
Well, Colin, let's move this to something that Connecticut gubernatorial candidates seem to want to talk about and the state is always concerned with. There's a lot of jobs to be had in renewable energy right now. Some states are really capitalizing on this, and you can create an awful lot of jobs. We also have a lot of jobs already existing in the state in the insurance and reinsurance industry. Those people, more than anybody else in the entire world, are really concerned about what happens on the shorelines, who builds in the shorelines. And these are things that directly affect jobs and finances here in Connecticut, two things that people really seem to care a lot about.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of the Bill McKibben idea that every state should have a massive solar panel factory or something equivalent to it. America's blindness about the problems posed by climate change and also by the international concern means that our companies have sometimes lagged behind because they don't even know how to build to the environmental standards in other countries. So, but I mean, I just want to go back to what Susan's saying because I think it's important too. What this issue needs is leadership. And we're not going to get any leadership out of Washington. I mean, they can barely even acknowledge that this study just came out. So the leadership has to come from someplace else. And in America, sometimes it's come from mayors. Mayors across this country have exercised leadership in making their cities greener. And the leadership, you know, Dan's right to the extent that it may be a drop in the bucket, but it's also leadership, you know, and leadership is an intangible in terms of getting people to think differently about this. And I just want to sort of hook that up to one other thing, back to what we were saying before. Being a governor is multitasking. Being a governor is not about saying every day, all I care about is lowering taxes, because if there's a massive hurricane, you know, you're not going to be able to lower taxes that day. And so when you're a governor, things come at you, things that you didn't plan on. And the job itself anyway is criminal justice and superior judge appointees and transportation and, yeah, environment, education, a whole bunch of stuff. And Stefanowski really needs – I mean, none of these candidates has really articulated a broad, deep set of understandings of issues. But Stefanowski in particular is, I think, offensively pivoting away from every other question that doesn't have something to do with lowering taxes. And it's got to stop. He has to be asked hard questions about the environmental stuff and a range of other issues, because that's what the job is. It's not a one-issue job.
He's already been asked the hard questions, and the media is not failing to do its job. He stands before you when you shake his hand and say, hello, I have a question, and he simply will not answer the question. And so getting back a little bit to the environment, I'm not saying that environmental issues aren't important. It is impossible to separate climate change from other broader environmental issues, particulate pollution, land use issues. Those are all really important to the state. And so it becomes an issue in the state because they don't separate out.
I want to ask you quickly, Danny, just before we run out of time in about 2 minutes, there's another issue that, you know, Bob Stefanowski doesn't really want to talk about. There's a whole thing that happened with the Supreme Court nominee and what that's going to mean to all sorts of people around the country having to do with Brett Kavanaugh on the court, any conservative court, really. What are some of the things that you're thinking about that maybe we haven't talked enough about the Kavanaugh impact here in the state?
Supreme Court justices are notoriously hard to predict. You know, Kennedy turned out to be a little bit more liberal than I think was expected. A number of other justices have. And Supreme Court decisions, their effects are hard to predict. And the one we just saw, the Janus decision, which allows state and municipal any public employees to drop out of their union dues paying without any ramifications. We see in Connecticut that's not having an effect on union members dropping out. They are not dropping out. The numbers are less than 0.5% that are dropping out. And so that tells you that maybe the Janus decision will actually strengthen unions. Unintended consequences, we could see it with Kavanaugh on the court.
About a minute for a thought there, Susan?
Ned Lamont understands that culture and politics are inseparable at this point. And he understands that you can't separate these things out at all. You can't separate the Kavanaugh thing out from just who you are and what you're running as at this point. And this is part of his appeal to women. It's why he's winning women by such a large margin. Stefanowski doesn't really seem to understand this. He's sort of for Trump. He's sort of, you know, he's okay with Kavanaugh, but he doesn't understand the larger cultural aspect of this.
Colin? When Stefanowski said he wanted to pass on the issue at a debate of the Kavanaugh issue and said it was a federal matter, Lamont had a good answer, which is you will appoint Supreme Court justices if you are governor. I think what's more important is you appoint a lot of judges if you're governor, a lot of judges. These candidates should be asked what their criteria are for Superior Court and appellate judges, not just Supreme Court.
Colin McEnroe hosts The Colin McEnroe Show. Danny Haar from Hearst Connecticut Media. Susan Bigelow here from CTNewsJunkie.com. Hey, we're going to take a break, and I'm going to send you to some colleagues who are going to tell you how and why you can support WNPR, Connecticut Public Radio, all the great stuff that we hear. We're in the middle of a very important campaign. Please do your part right now. Here's how you can help. This is The Wheelhouse. I'm John Dankosky. Join our conversation on our website, WNPR.org/The Wheelhouse. You can also give us a call, 860-275-7266. We're joined today by Colin McEnroe, the host of The Colin McEnroe Show here on Connecticut Public Radio, Susan Bigelow, a contributor to CTNewsJunkie.com, and Dan Haar, editor and columnist at Hearst Connecticut Media. We want to start with Chris Murphy, the sitting senator, obviously has a very high national profile, Colin, and we were going to talk about, and we still will talk about, Chris Murphy maybe not being a part of some of these statewide races. But we get this Q poll today, and we're going to talk mostly about, you know, what it shows you about Ned Lamont and Oz Griebel and Bob Stefanowski. But it has some interesting numbers in here for Chris Murphy, too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're not dispositive numbers. Chris Murphy is going to get his license renewed for another 6 years to be a senator. But he's only up by 15 points against a person I would classify as a relative unknown, Matthew Corey. Actually, Matthew Corey appears to be less unknown in this poll, anyway, less unknown than Oz Griebel. Oz Griebel has 72% of the people haven't heard enough about him. Matt Corey's number there is only 57%. He's this particular race right now in this poll has very hardened off major party positions. So, you know, overwhelmingly Democrats like Murphy, overwhelmingly Republicans like Corey. What we're left with is, you know, a closer battle among independents. That's where Corey is putting up his more surprising numbers. What I would say about this, and by the way, I say it's 57-39 among unaffiliated voters. I think what this is, I was trying to think about what this is about during the break. If you look in the gubernatorial race in this Q poll, the quality that people value most in a governor would bring change, something like that. And I do think that, you know, we've talked a lot about a blue tide here in November 2018, but this is also a change cycle. People aren't happy. So I'm guessing one of the reasons that Corey is just, he should be more than 15 points behind Murphy heuristically, but this could be just about change. Murphy's in, they want somebody different. Mm.
Well, I think it's about that, and I think it's also because Murphy does have a pretty high national profile, and which means that his race is going to be nationalized in a way. So his numbers, the number here that he's winning by, it's actually a little similar to Donald Trump's approval ratings in Connecticut. So I think broadly, if you approve of the president, you probably are going to vote for Matthew Corey, and if you don't, you're probably going to vote for Chris Murphy. So I think that there is something to that, and also there is a lot of independents. There are some who really, really hate Chris Murphy, and I've been surprised at the amount of hate that goes out towards him sometimes. So there is a faction of people who really don't like him.
When you talk about those Donald Trump numbers overall, I was thinking about Charlie Baker, the very popular Massachusetts Republican governor, who in a challenge over the summer from the right of his party, Once again, about 30-35% of the people in Massachusetts don't like Charlie Baker, and that's really the Donald Trump number right there, similarly, even though he's a very popular politician.
Yeah, well, that's a different – I think it might be different people in Massachusetts, but, here in Connecticut, Corey is benefiting from the fact that he's a likable guy, right? And so there's that likability factor that some people – we're not bashing in this segment, I gather, I think. So he's – when people meet him, he's a bar owner. He's a regular guy. He's like, Connecticut really liked Bill O'Neill, another bar owner who became governor. And he has that sort of personal appeal, and that may be something in the numbers. I think, yes, what Susan said about Chris Murphy, all these things that he's doing as an activist on guns and other issues does make enemies, those things do make enemies.
Well, but what about Chris Murphy in his overall role here? Still, as you say, Colin, he's popular amongst people in Connecticut, certainly Democrats, and he's going to probably be elected once again. But we don't really see him out there stumping really hard for people outside of Johanna Hayes, who is running in this contested 5th congressional district race.
No. And so Murphy will be the top line of the ballot. That can be very important, particularly if he does run strong. I mean, yes, he's a little soft right now in the Q poll, but we would expect Chris Murphy to win by a bigger margin than probably just about anybody else on the ballot. So he can really help other candidates. And to Susan's point, he's the guy who can nationalize these other races, right? He's the guy who could come into Connecticut because people listen to him on national issues. He can come into Connecticut. He can appear with Lamont and anybody else and Tong and people like that and say, yes, here's how the stuff that you're caring about at the national level, whether it's Kavanaugh or something else, here's how it devolves down to Connecticut, and here's why it's important to elect this slate and nobody else. And yeah, so far, we haven't seen that so much. I'm assuming that when Chris looks at these numbers, since he's only 15 points up, that might actually spur him to spend a little bit more time stumping around the state. He likes walking around Connecticut anyway. Danny like walking around Connecticut.
Yeah, well, you can learn a lot walking around Connecticut.
Cargo shorts.
Yeah.
No, that's true. You can learn a lot walking around Connecticut. Sometimes you don't learn some very nice things. But yeah, he can make an appearance, and I think he should. Because it will help Democrats here. But honestly, I think that he's more interested. I think this might be the problem. He's more interested in national stuff right now. He's less interested in Connecticut stuff. And that makes me wonder, what's he thinking about for 2020? There have been some rumors that of course, every Democrat's going to run in 2020. But I think that that's more on his mind than maybe some of the stuff happening here.
A quick thought, Danny?
As for the presidential race, I still think that Chris Murphy should have walked into the governor's office, done that job for a term or two, and then he would be a great presidential contender. Now he's going to be vulnerable for only having been a legislator.
But before we actually get to our last kind of fun topic here, I want to ask Susan about something that probably people aren't thinking about, too. If Chris Murphy's at the top of the ballot, there's some other things in the ballot that aren't people. They're actually some ballot questions. And we're not really talking about these at all. Just fill us in a little bit.
Okay, so there's two ballot questions. And it's rare that we have ballot questions because we don't have initiative, which means that people can't petition to get odd things and whatever else on the ballot. There's no sort of parallel legislative process for people to get laws passed here, that like there is in Massachusetts, for example. But what we have here is we have constitutional amendments. That's what we vote on, and one of them is the transportation lockbox, and that's supposed to protect transportation funding from raiding from the General Assembly. And the other one is about state lands, about the process that state lands, selling state lands, kind of goes through. And I know that Dan has some opinions on that, but those are the two ballot questions. And sometimes ballot questions can surprise us with what happens with them. A couple of years ago, there was a ballot question about changing voting, which would have opened the door to things like early voting and, no-fault absentee. And that was voted down. That was voted down by a fairly large...
And it polled winning a week out.
Yeah. And then people just said no to it. I think that they got in the voting booth and had an angry opinion about it. I don't know why. I still don't know why. But so sometimes these things can really surprise us because we don't expect them.
Yeah, and you don't always necessarily understand it. We talk about low-information voters, Danny. It's kind of hard to understand some of the questions that we're asking to vote about.
Well, that's right. And the lockbox issue is that the Republicans are unhappy because it's not strong enough. And in fact, what it says in plain English is money that is in the special transportation fund has to be used for transportation. It doesn't say what money goes into the fund and whether you can divert the money before it goes into the fund. So to say that's a loophole is like saying, you know, I don't know. It's a big loophole.
It's a big loophole, Colin.
In general, these are both fairly complicated questions that exist and work at a granular level. Probably you're better off electing highly competent representatives who can really go over this stuff and make sure it gets done right. I'm not terribly – I mean, I guess this sounds kind of elitist. And I also am aware of the fact we don't always elect highly competent legislators. But I'm a little nervous about how much comprehension there would be among, I mean, I think the average voter doesn't even know these questions. I know the average voter does not know these questions are going to be on the ballot. Susan's one of the few journalists to really take this on. So it may not be the best way to make donuts. Hey, I just have an announcement, which I figured out what my show is today. It's actually a show that ran 1 year to the day ago, and it's one of my favorite shows we've ever done. It's a show about the past, present, and future of yodeling. And on the show, Kyone Wolf and I actually got a yodeling lesson from a yodeling expert, and you'll hear all kinds of other things. So it's a very annoying show, but also a very delightful show.
That sounds very annoying and also delightful. Great. I agree with Colin. I don't like referendums as a way of legislating things. And these are constitutional amendments. Obviously, they have a process. But referendums can go really badly. Just look at any town's budget referendum process if you want to see just how badly they can go. They lead to all kinds of problems, schools not being funded, cranky people voting things down. It's not great. It's not a great thing. And just look at the problems California's had with them to see.
Well, California's had an awful lot of problems with them, but also even in our region, Maine and Massachusetts, you vote for things on these referendums, and then the legislature grabs them back anyway and kind of monkeys with them before they turn into actual law.
Nationally, I'm trying to think of an example of where democracy has gone amok. I'm thinking.
Nothing really comes to mind.
No, I can't think of anything either.
Yeah. Okay, we're gonna end with this really fun story here. Reading from the Hartford Courant, Bill and Hillary Clinton, who for 30 years lived at the fore of American politics, are setting off on a speaking tour, spanning two countries and 13 cities, including Wallingford, where the couple will speak at the Toyota Oakdale Theater on April 26th. Are you excited about the Clintons coming to Wallingford, Colin?
I can't even. This is just such a profoundly horrible and kind of offensive idea. And I know there are other people who believe differently about this, but look, there's two people here. One of them is a former president. Former presidents usually have a pretty circumscribed role in terms of what they do and what they don't do. You know, they might occasionally make statements about stuff, but they don't, you know, go on these protracted tours like this. And the other one is a losing candidate of the most recent election. And, you know, I mean, Al Gore was like in hiding for quite a while, and then he came out because of climate change, you know, like a really good reason. But other than that, nobody goes on tour who's a losing presidential candidate. And more to the point, what is the purpose of this? I assume it is more Clinton avarice, unless they can come up with some kind of explanation for where else this money is going. And it's also the need to be in the spotlight. This will be happening here in Wallingford, I believe, April 2019. That's kind of the beginning of the time that candidates who are positioning for 2020 in the presidential race need oxygen. And I assume we think that we're all done with having Clinton's run for president. So, I mean, you know, this is sort of Amy Klobuchar time, or it's, I mean, you pick whoever, Chris Murphy, whatever, whoever you think. It's not their time. They shouldn't be doing this.
Would it change your mind if I told you that Counting Crows were opening for them at the Oakdale?
No, it wouldn't.
Okay, a quick thought, Dan.
They're only going to do the rope line. There's no speaking. It's just Bill Clinton on a rope line. Boy, he does a rope line better than anybody.
Hey, well, he does,
I suppose. He won't leave the rope.
Hey, well, Colin touched on this. Should it matter, Dan? Where this money's going? I mean, we don't know yet. Is this going into the Clintons' pocketbooks? Is this going to help get Democrats reelected? Is this going to help feed people in Africa? Where's
it's
the money going?
To the Clinton Foundation, where it will ultimately finance the defense of investigations.
Susan.
Boy, this feels like squeezing lemon on the wound. I can't imagine being interested in this. But you know what? If you decide to buy tickets to this and go, you know, buy everywhere here, then you realize that your money may be going to some who knows where.
But I think it's important, though, and Colin makes this point. The Democratic mood of the day given Hillary Clinton's loss, given the rise of candidates coming from the left, given Bernie Sanders, et cetera, I just don't know what the appetite is. I mean, this might very well be Counting Crows showing up at the Oakdale and half the place in full.
Yeah, and yeah, bringing back the 90s, great. yeah, some sort of mediocre bands from the 90s, great, that's fun. But no, I don't see the appetite for it either. I would rather that they just kind of faded away.
I will say this. If you haven't seen Bill Clinton speak in person, he really, really is a special speaker in person. Agree or disagree with him?
Yeah, but I don't know how this kind of Steve and Edie format works. I would agree about Bill Clinton being a mesmerizing speaker at times. Look, I mean, Susan said bringing back the 90s. So we've recently had some podcasts and books that deal with the 90s and the specific aspect of the 90s of Bill Clinton's sexual foibles. I also think sort of at this Kavanaugh moment, this Me Too moment, Bill Clinton still stands accused of rape by Juanita Broderick. And she's in some ways more credible than Christine Blasey Ford, who I find very credible. But I mean, I say more credible in the sense that she has a lot more details that she can summon up. It's a worse story because it's a full-out rape if it's true, and he was an adult at the time that it happened. I mean, it's, you know, and the Paula Jones story is the story of a governor taking out his organ to sexually harass an employee. So if that's true, it's a really bad story. So I just think, you know, who needs to see this guy on stage right now?
I think we'll leave it there with Colin McEnroe, the host of The Colin McEnroe Show. Thanks so much. Looking forward to yodeling this afternoon, Colin.
Me too.
Thanks to Danny Haar from Hearst, Connecticut Media. Thanks so much, Dan.
I'm practicing yodeling myself.
And thanks to Susan Bigelow from CTNewsJunkie.com. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
The Wheelhouse is produced by Scott Breedy. Katie Talarski is our executive producer. Thanks to Carlos Mejia and Kion Wolf. Panina Beatty helped out with the show. And now you're going to hear how exactly you can become a member of Connecticut Public Radio.
I'm Betsy Kaplan here with Tucker Ives, and I'm really glad, Tucker, that Colin remembered that this afternoon's show was yodeling.
It only took him an hour.
It took him a long time. I was going to ask our listeners if they maybe wanted to send him an email at colin@wnpr.org and just remind him of yodeling, but I'm glad he remembered, so now you don't have to do that. But I want to thank, we've had a lot of support this hour, Tucker, a lot.
Yeah.
I want to thank Mary Ann from West Hartford. She said, "We feed her mind." Alfred from West Hartford, Barbara from Seymour. We've had a number of other guests, New Haven, Cheshire, Middletown, Waterbury. And I want to say thanks Stuart from East Hampton, who said, "Sorry, Colin, but Harriet has beat you out for the best radio voice."
And that's our business reporter and managing editor, Harriet Jones.
So stick it there, huh, for Colin. Take that, Colin. Anyways, if this is, you clearly like The Wheelhouse. It keeps the local news in the forefront, even when all sorts of things are going on in the world. We get to the national news as well. It's a great panel, always a great panel. Insightful, thoughtful, analytical. 1-800-584-2788 or WNPR.org.
And we do have a drawing this drive that may be of interest to Wheelhouse fans. We have 8 pairs of tickets to see Doris Kearns Goodwin speak on Saturday, November 3rd at the Lyman Center in New Haven. She's going to be speaking about her new book, Leadership in Turbulent Times. And we have VIP tickets that will be up for you to get if you make a call at 1-800-584-2788, hopefully with a pledge. Or if you do, make a contribution online at WNPR.org. You will be automatically entered into this drawing, and if you are already a existing monthly donor, you have already been entered into this drawing as well. So you can get this VIP ticket to meet the legendary historian and writer, and this is just one of the many ways that we have to say thank you. So give us a call at 1-800-584-2788, 1-800-584-2788, or WNPR.org.
Yeah, and don't forget, this is The Wheelhouse is our Wednesday morning show. It's a terrific local show, but we also have 4 other local shows. We have The Colin McEnroe Show. Where We Live is on at 9 o'clock when The Wheelhouse isn't on. We have the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, and we have a great John's Other Show. It's next. It'll air every Thursday afternoon. It's a regional show. It's a terrific show. So again, it's a small station. We produce a lot of local content. Give us a call if you appreciate that thing. And let me just say real quick before we go that although we had a big day yesterday giving away the socks, today is Newsday Wednesday. You can get an annual 1-year subscription, digital subscription to the New York Times for $15 a month. It's usually $19 a month. Now we've got $15 a month. That's a real deal. So don't let it pass by. 1-800-584-2788 or go online at WNPR.org where you can get all sorts of gifts. Thanks very much.
This is Connecticut Public Radio.